If you've been watching the news lately, you may have been struck by the involvement of robots in two of the biggest stories of the week. The other day, it was a robot that rescued the parrot trapped in the apartment building that partially collapsed, and another robot was involved in the raids on the homes of suspected terrorists. Robots are clearly heading into dangerous territory. So what are the developments in artificial intelligence that make it possible for robots to go into situations too hazardous for humans? To talk about the latest developments in AI, we have two distinctly superior human intelligences. Dr. Debbie Richards, who works in the area of knowledge-based systems at Macquarie University. She's a scientist in residence at the ABC this month. And Dr. Mark Peters from the University of New South Wales. He's working on perception and AI. Thanks, both of you, for coming to Life Matters.
Hi.
Thank you, Richard.
Debbie, how many of us, many of us have this idea of sci-fi artificial intelligence. What is it?
Artificial intelligence is getting a computer to do what humans do. So what is considered intelligent in a human, but it's a little bit different. We might think playing chess is intelligent, but there's a lot of things that humans do, such as picking something up, walking somewhere, recognising someone's face. They're intelligent as well.
Mark, how closely can computers think like people?
Well, to answer that, we'd have to know exactly what thinking entails. In other words, we've looked into this in many different ways. Neuroscientists, psychologists, philosophers, and computer scientists. And thinking is still pretty much a mystery.
Consciousness is one of the great mysteries, isn't it?
It's one of the great mysteries. And I'd have to say we're probably using a blunt instrument. We're trying to do something that is very, very complex with what a relatively simple tool. So I'd say we're still a long way away.
Well, Debbie, is AI really about getting a computer to think like a person?
Thinking is a very big part of it, but we do other things as well. So while picking something up requires us thinking about it, or walking to somewhere, or hearing something requires some thinking, these are all parts of AI that we need to be able to include in our systems, so that it has the full range. So thinking is just a part of it.
I suppose we can also kind of do it the other way around, and by working with AI, gain some insights into what Mark was talking about, trying to work out how we think.
Yes, a big part of it is not just getting the computer to behave like a human, but using the computer to learn more about how we behave. So, yeah, lots of studies have been done using computers to collect data on how people have behaved, and in that way we've understood what the human is up to. And to write these computer programs that simulate humans, we have to study humans more as well.
It's all connected. One of the differences between computers and us is that we have common sense, well, most of us, and computers don't seem to. Why can't they?
It takes a while to build up common sense, and they're very basic things. So common sense, for instance, would be if you have an umbrella, you know that if it's raining, if you're inside, you don't need to put it up. But if you go outside, you do need to put the umbrella up. A computer doesn't know that. It needs to be told it's raining, you're outside, better put the umbrella up. But as humans, we take many of those things for granted.
But why is that? Is it because, common sense is contextual, isn't it? That must be part of it.
Yes, it's very much the context, and also there's just so much of it. There was a really big 10-year program in America trying to collect all the common sense knowledge that we have, and essentially it was a failure. They made some progress, but it was just too hard. We know too much.
Right, okay. Well, Mark, can we expect computers then to become so human-like in the future that we interact with them as if they are people?
Yes, I think we do that to some extent anyway. We anthropomorphize all sorts of things that aren't at all like us, like, you know, cars, pieces of machinery. The more people work with these things, the more they treat them like personalities. The developments in Japan are particularly interesting. They like robots that are like people simply because they like it. There's no reason why a robot needs to have two arms and two legs. In fact, that's a very unstable design. But when we're looking for ways in which robotics is going to develop, that clearly seems to dominate because the Japanese are just so active. So the more time will go on, the harder it may become to tell whether something's actually real or artificially created.
That's interesting, isn't it, that preference for the humanoid type? Because in lots of ways of, say, moving and moving over uneven ground, the more the insect type might be an easier way to go.
Exactly. So it looks like we're building these things that in some way have some characteristics like us, and because of that, we want to make them more like us.
With the classic metallic boxy robot on TV this week, in going into dangerous areas, how important is it for an AI to have sense organs?
My view is that it's absolutely essential. If you want to have a common sense robot, as Debbie said, you've either got to program the common sense into it bit by bit, or it needs to be in touch with the world. It needs to be tapping into sensory data, whether it's hearing, sound, or vision, in order for it to learn these sorts of things itself. So it needs to know that if there's an obstacle and it runs into it, that it could damage itself and therefore avoid the object. But without sensors, these sorts of things would never happen.
Most of us take them all for granted, but this turns out to be a very hard problem, doesn't it, perception?
In fact, it's much harder than basic intelligence. Playing chess has turned out to be relatively easy. Flying through a forest, which any small bird can do, turns out to be incredibly difficult.
Yes, and any small bird has a very small brain, but
a bird brain, in fact.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking, we're just the problem of vision, and we're overwhelmingly visual creatures. We use a huge amount of our brain to do our visual processing. No wonder it's so difficult to try and build an intelligence that can correctly perceive.
Yes, I must say, the more I've studied vision, the more I'm in awe of what we achieve with 2 pounds of flesh. It is actually quite amazing.
Debbie, how does emotion fit into AI?
Well, when I first was working in artificial intelligence, I thought it was quite silly to include emotion because I thought that was an aspect that made us unpredictable. And why would we want our computers to be unpredictable? But I've changed my view on that. And we want our computers to have emotion in them because we need them to behave realistically, not all the time, but so for a training simulation or for planning purposes, if we're using something to plan, the fact is that as humans, we do everything involving our emotions. And if you use a computer to plan how you're going to behave when you're out in the jungle and you don't include emotion in it, then you're really not experiencing what's really going to happen. So it's quite important that we include emotion in our computers.
I know the US military has been leading the way in a lot of these sort of training type AIs. So if the scenario is that there's a soldier and he's tired and he's, trying to do something difficult, you have to try and find a way of modelling the stress and the tiredness as much as anything else.
Yes, and the key thing is it is just a model. So we don't expect we're going to have computers that cry. For one thing, they probably blow a circuit and rust. But if we did go so far as to make them cry, it would be in response to what we've programmed them to do. They would be...
I think there's another aspect to this too. And I think that emotion is linked to your sense of values and a sense of good and bad. And those are things that we also need to build into any real artificial intelligence.
If we do succeed in this, and I know that's a very long way off, if at all, have we kind of missed the point? Because AIs can do things that people can't at the moment, and maybe one of the reasons that they can, and they will in the future, is they're unencumbered by emotion.
Yes. In other words, they'll work for 1,000 years on a boring problem if we want them to, and that might be a good thing. We actually want the best of both worlds. We want some machine-like qualities, but we also want some human-like qualities. And we need a sense of values, I think.
Well, speaking of drudgery and tasks, what about the use of AI in the house? I'm really looking forward to the home bot that does all the work while I lie around and read the papers. Is that going to happen, Debbie?
Yes, there's work being done on robots in the home, but they're not going to be able to do everything. So it's not going to be like Bicentennial Man who picks up the kids from school and does your washing and cooks dinner. You might have several different robots that would do each of those tasks. And in fact, most of us have robots or some artificial intelligence in our home of some sort. It could be in our microwave, it could be in our washing machine, and many of us already have intelligence in our home, and there's going to be more and more of that.
I think I've read or perhaps seen on television a robot that's not a million miles away from those robot dogs that can, that is a vacuum cleaner. Is that right?
Yes, you can buy them. They're about $200. I don't know how good a job they do, but they're there right now.
And they'll go out and clean your room for you?
They kind of wander around like a pool cleaner.
Right. So maybe not as effective as all that. Well, look, hearing all this, I can't help but be impressed at how special humans are.
Absolutely.
What does AI tell us about being human?
It tells us that it's very, very complex. It's very advanced. And it literally is one of the marvels of the universe, I think. Consciousness and intelligence is something that is going to pose a problem to us for a long, long time.
Debbie, what are the sort of the next big AI problems to solve?
Well, I think certainly natural language is a big part of it. To be able to just speak to our computer instead of having this thing on our desk, they just become part of the walls and you can just talk to them and they do. And there are already systems that do that to some extent, but again, it requires a lot of common sense and a lot of technology that we currently don't have.
Right, so instead of giving them information in a very prescribed way to suit them, just being able to interact with them as we do now.
Oh, absolutely. There's a lot of complexity in just understanding what we're saying. Again, it comes a lot back to context. You know, we can work out the context of something, the meaning of something, but computers in general don't understand the meaning of what we're saying. We have to tell them what to do.
How far are we from doing that, do you think?
People always say at least 10 years. I'd say...
They've been saying that for a long time,
exactly,
haven't they?
They've been saying it for about 50 years, in fact. I'm not going to be brave enough to say a long time.
Are you going to be a bit braver?
Well, one of the big goals that has been around for a long time is that... So you've seen those little robots you were talking about. So they have dogs that play soccer together and they have other robots that play soccer together. There's been a goal in AI to verse the soccer champions of the world.
Yes, that's right.
And I think when I first heard of it, it was in the early 2000s. And I don't know what date they're up to now. Of course, they keep moving it forward.
Understandably, I think.
But again, you know, the goal, I think a key thing that we've learnt from all of this is what is the goal of AI, and I think it should be to support humans and definitely not to replace them.
Well, on that philosophical note, I'll say thank you to Dr. Debbie Richards, who works in the area of knowledge-based systems at Macquarie, and she's a scientist in residence at the ABC this month. And Dr. Mark Peters from the University of New South Wales, he's working on perception and AI. Coming up, from biblical times to now, the fears and follies of one of life's certainties, taxes. I'm Richard Adey, and this is Life Matters on ABC Radio National.